that the Supreme Truth is correct in his opinion. Whereas one who has his opinion about the Supreme does not know him. He is unknown to those who claim to know him, and can only be known to those who do not claim to know him. Acharya Sridhar Swami gives the following explanation of this verse. Many philosophers have studied the mysteries of life from various perspectives and have formed widely differing theories. The Advaita Mayavadis, for example, propose that there is only one living being and one power of illusion, avidya, that covers him, producing the appearance of plurality. But this hypothesis leads to the absurd conclusion that when any one living being becomes liberated, everyone obtains liberation. If, on the other hand, there are many avidyas to cover the one living being, and each avidya will cover only some part of him, we would have to talk about his becoming partly liberated at particular times while his other parts remain in bondage. This is also obviously absurd. Thus, the plurality of living beings is an unavoidable conclusion. Furthermore, there are other theoreticians, namely the proponents of Nyaya and Vaisheshika, who claim that the jiva soul is infinite in size. If souls were infinitesimal, these scholars argue, they would not pervade their own bodies, whereas if they were of medium size, they would be divisible into parts and thus would not be eternal, at least according to the axioms of Nyaya Vaisheshika metaphysics. But if the numerous eternal jiva souls are each infinitely large, how could they be covered by any power of bondage, whether belonging to the avidya or to the Supreme Lord himself? According to this theory, there can be no illusion for the soul, no limitations from which to be liberated. The infinite souls must eternally remain as they are without change. This would mean that the souls would all be equal to God, since he would have no scope for controlling these all-pervading, unchanging rivals. The Vedic Shruti mantras, which affirm unequivocally the mastery of the Lord over individual souls, cannot be validly contradicted. A true philosopher must accept the statements of Shruti as reliable authority on all matters they touch. Certainly numerous places of Vedic literatures contrast the Supreme Lord's perpetual, unchanging oneness with the ever-changing embodiments of living beings caught up in the cycle of birth and death. Śrīla Śrīdhāra Swāmī prays, Antā yantā sarava lokasya gītaha śrutya yutā cevam eva vāsaya yā sarvajñā sarva śakti nṛsimha śrīmantam tam citasāiva bhavande. In my heart I take shelter of him who is glorified as the inner controller of all worlds, and whom the Vedas ascertain in truth through logical reasoning. He is Nṛsimha, the omniscient and omnipotent Lord of the Goddess of Fortune. I'll just read the translation again. If the countless living entities were all pervading and possessed forms that never changed, you could not possibly be their absolute ruler, O immutable one. But since they are your localized expansions and their forms are subject to change, you do control them. Indeed, that which supplies the ingredients for the generation of something is necessarily its controller, because a product never exists apart from its ingredient cause. It is simply illusion for someone to think that he knows the Supreme Lord, who is equally present in each of his expansions, since whatever knowledge one gains from material means must be imperfect. So, about 5,000 years ago, and even previous to that, there were various philosophers, which we have discussed, six in principle, six main philosophies, so actually many, many, many different philosophies, and they, each from their own speculative point of view, gave their opinion on what is the essential teachings, the conclusions of the Vedas. And of course, when we discuss that, the conclusion we want to know, who am I? And is there God? Am I God? If I'm not, who is God? What is he like? These are the questions. These are normal questions that people always want to know. It is the very nature, even from childhood. A little child, they will question, and gradually they will want to know, you know, who am I? Who are you? You know, are you my brother? Are you my sister? You know, what is my relationship with? It is natural. Where do I fit in? What's happening here? I took birth in this world. Where do I fit in? And what is the relationship of superior and inferior? Even a little child will actually question these. Therefore you have the poem, Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, How I Wonder What You Are. Huh? Isn't it? As Prabhupada actually says, how when people look in the sky, it's very natural, they wonder, you know, what are the stars, what are the moon? So right from childhood, twinkle, twinkle in the star, how I wonder what you are. Up above the sky, so high, like a diamond in the sky. Twinkle, twinkle in the star, how I wonder what you are. So, that is natural. The Vedas, they actually give the answer. The difficulty is that if people try to understand Vedic knowledge without a bona fide spiritual master, then they cannot understand the Vedas. And therefore, Vedic knowledge was originally imparted to Lord Brahma, the original person within the universe, and Lord Narayana himself gave him the understanding of what is Vedic knowledge. And therefore we will see in the Brahma Samhita that Lord Brahma, he realized that he was the eternal maid servant of the Lord, the eternal servant of the Lord. That the Lord is the supreme personality of Godhead and I am his eternal servant. So that is, from the very beginning of creation, that knowledge was understood by Lord Brahma. And then he disseminated that knowledge throughout the universe. That knowledge came down through his disciples, Narada Muni. And of course Narada Muni instructed Śrīla Vyāsadeva, who thought it wise to write down the Vedas, which were previously just spoken. People were able to just remember them. Vyasadeva compiled them, compiled them in such a way that they were easily distributed. And then Srila Vyasadeva gave that knowledge to Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami gave that knowledge to Pariksit Maharaj. Gradually this knowledge has come down. In the Bhagavad Gita we can trace the disciplic succession, the various acharyas all the way down into Madhvacharya, Madhavendra Puri, Ishvara Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course it was Krishna himself, again reviving the same knowledge. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, and Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivasacharya, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and Baladeva Vijayabhasan, and Jagannath Das Babaji, and then through Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, and to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, to Srila Prabhupada, and then to us. as the same knowledge, all the way from Brahma, and accepting that knowledge from Brahma, one can easily understand. Although the Vedas are very difficult to understand, because they deal with the essence of knowledge, which is transcendental knowledge, which is actually about that which is beyond the material world. How can we have access to knowledge beyond the material world? We have to have someone who is beyond the material world, who has fully realized that knowledge, must be able to pass it down. So that's what has happened. Otherwise we cannot even go beyond this world. It's very difficult for us to understand what is outside of Melbourne, what is outside of Victoria, what is outside of Australia. Let alone what is on the other side of the ocean, what is on the out in space, what is on the other side of the moon, what is on the other side of the sun, what is far beyond the stars, what are the stars, what is beyond the darkness, what is beyond the whole material energy. How can we even know that unless that knowledge is passed down? So that is the process, and that knowledge has been passed down, and that is the message of the Vedas. Unequivocally, the Vedas give that knowledge that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose original form is Krishna, who extends as Balaram, and Narayan, Sankarshan, Mahavishnu, like this. And also then there are the Supreme Lord has his material energy, his spiritual energy, and the marginal energy, which are the living entities, which are tiny, fragmental, little particles of living entities, which are eternally, tiny little infinitesimal living entities. And the Vedas give so much description that they are different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence. See, the Vedas very clearly describe there is that person who is omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, who is a maintainer of all living entities, the Supreme Lord, the creator of the material universes, and the spiritual and material world. And then there are the living entities who are conditioned and controlled by the Lord's various energies. Very, very clearly described. So this knowledge, we can have that knowledge and understand that in about 2 minutes. If it comes down in disciplic succession, as you know. But if it doesn't come down in disciplic succession, it's not possible to know it, no matter how refined one's intelligence is in the material world. And therefore, for millenniums and millenniums, literally since the dawn of creation, various philosophers have been giving their opinion from a material perspective, because they cannot give any other perspective. If you're a conditioned soul in the material world, ruled by, covered by the material energy, you can only give a material perspective. So they give their various material perspective, which ultimately, to one degree or another, have some sort of impersonalism and a lack of understanding of action of the personality of Godhead. And if you take all the various philosophies that are there, you can really summarize them into, six principal philosophies and some subdivisions of that. Therefore the Vedas here describing that those persons, those philosophers who are saying we know all about Brahman, here they're saying if someone says that, those people don't know. If someone says, as soon as someone says, yes, I know and I'll give you my opinion. So merely understand, that person doesn't know. That's the wonderful thing about the Srimad Bhagavatam, you can immediately identify anyone and where they're situated. The Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, similarly Srila Prabhupada would say, we have our criteria. You either surrender to God or you're a rascal. you can immediately understand to one degree, or another. Someone is to some degree or another surrendered, or some degree or another they're a rascal. You can't be unsurrendered to God and not have some rascal. To the degree you're not surrendered, to that degree you're a rascal. It's just very clear. Here also they're saying that those who claim, yes, I can tell you all about Brahman, the Supreme, immediately understand, you do not understand. And if someone says, I do not understand about Brahman, I do not understand anything about Brahman, it is beyond the realms of, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, no quiddle which could be ascertained by dragging heaven and hell through your empiric senses or some statement like that. We cannot know, but if we hear from those who do know, then we can know. So someone, we say, yes, I do not know the Supreme Brahman, but the Supreme Brahman has revealed himself and he says that he is like this, and therefore, yes, now I can understand. So, these various philosophers, Srila Prabhupada describes them as mental speculators and all illusions. So what to speak, these philosophers, of course, existed in Vedic times, and they were extremely exalted personalities. You have people like Gautama. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, the Gautama, all these different great sages have, their dynasties, and to come in their dynasty is very prestigious. In fact, Srila Prabhupada actually came in that line of Gautama, and therefore they have the name Dave, Chatham Dave. Which indicates coming in that line. Very, very great sages. But still, even though they were fully self-controlled, full control of their mind and senses, vastly learned in the Vedas, very qualified, many very powerful, mystic personalities, very exalted, they literally seem to be able to travel to various places in the universe, and they exist for millions of years. And their wisdom is beyond what we can understand. And yet, Srila Prabhupada describes them as being bewildered by the material energy, bewildered by illusion. Because, for that one point, is that they don't accept knowledge coming down in the disciplic succession coming from Krishna, and therefore they cannot know. Yet, it's interesting that as you go through the Srimad Bhagavatam, this in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the purport there, Srila Prabhupada describes those same six philosophers, and the Gautama, Jaimini, Patanjali, he describes them as devotees who are helping people become Krishna conscious. So, in that sense, that appears to be a complete contradiction from other statements where Srila Prabhupada and even the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami also, and here, this verse, saying that they're actually illusions, mental speculators, and in many ways tinged by impersonalism. So, again, without being without taking knowledge from the Parampara, from the Guru, it's not possible to understand. And one must understand that the spiritual master is not an ordinary human being. Srila Prabhupada, every word he spoke was backed up. Srila Prabhupada wouldn't say something unless it was backed up by something he heard one in the Acharya say, or it was in the Vedic literatures, otherwise he wouldn't say it. It's interesting to say, to take the case of Gautama, now, they existed about the time of Vyasadeva, and they did create these various philosophies. Then you see later, when Krishna went to Kurukshetra, many of those philosophers and sages actually went there. And while they were there, they actually prayed to Lord Krishna, "You please bless us with pure devotional service," because in the presence of Krishna, they finally understood that here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there's no doubt about it, and I am His eternal servant. Let me take up the pure devotional service. And Krishna actually blessed them. "Yes, you know, I will bless you with pure devotional service." And also, you see personalities like Gautama and these other sages, they were there then. Later, when Sukadeva recited the Srimad Bhagavatam, then they heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami when he recited it to Purita Maharaj. And, you know, according to their ability, certainly being influenced by jnana and speculation to some degree, would hinder their ability to absorb the four messages from the Bhagavatam compared to others who may be more submissive and less tainted by these philosophical nonsense in their head. But also in the Padma Purana we see that Gautama, he actually instructed Ambarish Maharaj that you constantly hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. So from the philosophy, creating certain philosophies which were propounded, which were based on various types of illusion, you see actually then gradually, by Krishna's mercy, some of those personalities actually became devotees and then preached the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam as opposed to the philosophy which they created. But it's interesting because, those who follow personalities like Gautama, even though he is then preaching Srimad Bhagavatam, they're still following the old philosophy. They don't change. You see that There's some funny story about someone who claimed to be God, and say he was celibate and what have you, and then he had sexual relationships with one of his disciples, one girl, and so a lot of his disciples, everyone was thinking, oh, we thought you were God. So, that's okay, this is my eternal consort. Oh, okay. So then they follow that philosophy. Yeah. And you see some people just, particularly want to believe some particular thing. They will just follow that blindly. Here, even though the guru has actually taken expanded their spiritual understanding, the disciples, many of them, are still following the philosophy which is based upon illusion. We see evidence of this also in with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went through India and he came across the Tathavadis. Now, the Tathavadis, of course, are followers of Madhvacharya, so they're in our Sampradaya in one sense, because we are coming in the Sampradaya of Madhvacharya, and they are also coming in the Sampradaya of Madhvacharya. But coming through Madhavendra Puri, Ishwar Puri, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the philosophical understanding and realizations that were present within our Sampradaya actually became completely full or further illuminated. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was discussing with the Tathavadi, he was asking them, what is the goal of life? And they were explaining that, if you follow the Varnashrama system and dedicate your activities in the Varnashrama system to the Supreme Lord, that is the perfection. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu differed and said, no, actually, hearing and chanting Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam is actually the process, and the highest goal of life is actually prema, pure love of God. So he gave a higher goal of life rather than liberation, even though it may be liberation to Vaikuntha. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the goal of prema, that the devotee is not interested in, even in liberation to Vaikuntha, they just want to develop that pure love of God. And that is developed through Shravanam, Kirtanam, hearing, chanting, remembering these processes. So, although we're coming in the same Sampradaya, there was a progression. So we follow the progressed Acharyas, we follow the Acharyas, in one sense, modern, in the sense that they're from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu onwards. Whereas previous Acharyas, are those before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we offer them respect as within our Sampradaya, that their teachings are not incorrect, but there is a progression from what they have taught, which was given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we should not stick to the, even though we follow Madhvacharya, we should not stick to the philosophy of the Tathavadis. Similarly, we accept Lord Buddha as an incarnation, but we don't, we offer all respect to Lord Buddha as an empowered Saktavesha avatar, but we don't actually follow his philosophy. Because there is a progression of understanding. That Lord Buddha, over 2,500 years ago, the Karma Mimamsas, which are one of these six philosophical sampradayas, which is based upon some sort of illusion, they had taken some of the statements of the Vedas and they were using them so that they could have unrestricted, more and more unrestricted slaughter of animals for their, and more and more sense gratification was being coming into their activities. And therefore Lord Buddha, he saw that as a misuse of Vedic knowledge, the Vedic ceremonies, and he wanted to take the Vedas, take them, separate them from the Vedas, so that they would not misuse the Vedas. So therefore he preached his Buddhist philosophy, and in that way they stopped following the Vedas. And then after Lord Buddha, gradually Sankaracharya brought them back to the Vedas when after some time, and then but only brought them back with an impersonal understanding of Brahman. And then the Acharyas, they defeated that Madhvacharya, what have you, they defeated that impersonal concept. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the, full description of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's a progression of understanding over, some centuries. So we don't stick to the philosophy of Buddha because, in the same way, if you go to primary school and then secondary school, it's not that the lessons are, incorrect, but you follow those lessons which are appropriate to your level of awareness and application. So, for instance, some of the things that you do in primary school, you don't necessarily do in tertiary school, right? So in other words, when the bell rings, you don't go out and start playing chasing. Although if you're in primary school, the bell rings, the teacher will say, well, now you can go play tiki outside. So, you get to university and you hear the bell, time for tiki. Strange enough, they're actually still doing that. But, so some things change. So, in this way, we don't disrespect our primary teachers, and in the same way, we don't disrespect these philosophers such as, Jaini and Gautama and what have you. They were actually personally invited by personalities like Yudhisthira Maharaj. They were invited to the Rajasuya Yajna. They were invited, to go and see Krishna and Kurukshetra, and to hear Srila Bhagavatam. So we certainly, don't disrespect them as if they're all rascals and what have you, because even though their philosophy was based upon some aspect of illusion, because they weren't coming in as bona fide disciple succession, still, their knowledge was derived from the Vedas, and it did offer a stepping stone of understanding to some degree to help us to understand, to a certain point, some element of Vedic thought. Srila Vyasadeva, of course, he actually studied all of these different Vedic philosophers, the principal Vedic philosophers. And he studied, Gautama and Kanada and Jami and Patanjali, and after studying their philosophies, he then, summarized everything more clearly and put their philosophies in proper perspective as one whole unit within the Vedanta Sutra. So it's not that their philosophies were completely rejected, but if there was some limitation, certainly yesterday pointed that out. So, therefore, Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he says, I offer my respects from a distance to these personalities such as Gautama and Kanada and Patanjali. I offer my respects from a distance. And that's how, these great sages, great personalities, actually, whenever someone takes birth, they're automatically in indebted to many of these great sages because they actually have given us a lot of very valuable knowledge by which this world is able to progress in all respects, materially and spiritually. Even though there's some limitations and some faults within the philosophy, it's not that the whole thing is completely erroneous. So therefore we offer respect for what they have done, but we follow the complete and perfect philosophy which is given in the Bhagavad Gita by Krishna himself and which is expanded upon in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what we follow. It is a complete and perfect philosophy that is all in relationship with the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. So I'll just might just leave it there. Anyone has any questions or comments? Why has the Lord directed?
Yes, the Jesus into plant, animal, human life rather than letting them become star. Because the super soul is brighter than the millions of stars. This is just a question. Why not that? Why limit us into these categories?
Well, each planet and star actually has a deity.
Yes.
And that deity is a spirit soul. They do. There are, for instance, in the sun, there's a spirit soul, Vidushvan, who is a predominating deity, and who's by his energy and personal direction, the planet of the sun is manifesting its activities. And they have that power to the same as Lord Brahma. He is the spirit soul, the jiva. In one sense, the universe is one form of Brahma's body. He has control of it. Even some stones are also have spirit souls, not all, but some. That's what otherwise where did Ayers Rock come from? Obviously food. But living entities can exist anywhere. Sarvita or Bhavai. They're not limited. As if we're not aware of all the different forms that living entities take. But there's actually 8,400,000 different species. So, for instance, if we take the human form, there are 400,000 different species. So, on this planet, we may have maybe, at most, maybe a couple of thousand.
The Bhaktivedanta Purana says that all 400,000 are present on Earth. They're the gradations of consciousness.
Right. Okay. I heard Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada saying something different to that then. So, but there are 400,000 different species of humans. So you can imagine just how many different forms, and then 8 million, and another 8 million different species of life. They literally pervade everything within the universe. Anything that is showing symptoms of life, growth, what have you, is due to the presence of the spirit soul. Any other questions?
The Prabhupada makes that comment that there's...
Yeah, I was listening to who's Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, who's giving couple of lectures on the the early verses. I'll try and find the exact statement from what I remember. He was describing that there's a certain percentage here and the other percentage is elsewhere. But I'll try and find the exact reference. Yeah. Any other questions, comments? So, just final point. It's interesting that trying to just understand the nature of the spirit soul is obviously not possible, even for these great scholars and sages and saint persons. What to speak of ordinary people like us. It is just not possible. These are extremely powerful, extremely enlightened personalities, and they just cannot grasp the nature of the soul, let's just speak of the supreme soul. So, after many, 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 many lifetimes, as described, one comes to the understanding that Vasudeva, Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, that he is everything. That he is the supreme personality of Godhead, and they surrender unto him. That means they understand he is everything, I am not, so I surrender to you. That's over many, many, many lifetimes. It could be, over several days of Brahma, or even several, lifetimes within various universes, or even millions of us. Existences within millions of universes. We come to that understanding that Vasudeva is everything. So, for instance, if we see the average person out in the street there, then when we look at them, we may conclude that in the normal course of events, it may be billions and billions and billions and billions of years before that person evolves to the point where they can understand the Supreme Lord, his position, and our position as his eternal servant. Billions and billions of years. Going back into the animal species, humans, demigod, back into the animal species, different universes. And after many, many, many such lifetimes, one comes to understand Vasudeva is everything and surrenders. That comes to the perfection of knowledge. If one doesn't surrender to Vasudeva, then one's knowledge is still imperfect. As soon as one surrenders to Vasudeva, it's considered one's knowledge is perfect. So knowing that ultimately that's the point that we have to come to, rather than to say, well, okay, let me take millions and millions of birds, sometimes as a dog, sometimes as a worm, sometimes as an insect, sometimes as this, sometimes as that, sometimes in the house plant, sometimes in the earth. Rather than me going through all of that just to come to the same point that I'm at now, that I have to surrender to Vasudev, Prabhupada says, why not just do it now? That is intelligent. And he says there's actually two different processes. One, you can gather that knowledge, studying all these different philosophers, and gradually you evolve to the next philosopher as something a little bit more, and gradually, you know, over so many lifetimes. And then, you know, coming to the real conclusion of Vedas, and then you surrender to Vasudev. Or, you just surrender to Vasudev, and because you actively engage in devotional service, then Krishna just gives you that knowledge through the disciple succession, through the lips of a pure devotee, within a few minutes, and that knowledge is automatically attained. If the pure devotee, Krishna's representative, says to us, "You're Krishna's servant, Krishna's God, you're his servant, take up devotional service." All we have to do is we accept that, and we save ourselves billions of years. So much trouble, so much work in there. And even though we don't fully understand it, if we actually, you know, accept, yes, I don't fully understand it. Prabhupada says I'm the servant of God, Krishna says I'm the servant of God, Srimad Bhagavatam, Madhvacharya, Lord Chaitanya, all the acharyas, everyone, the Vedas, they say that I'm the servant of God. I don't understand it, but I'll accept that. And by accepting that and serving, then that knowledge is very, very quickly. You know, devotees sometimes think, you know, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, and you know, I've been a devotee for a few years, and I just don't seem to be getting anywhere. And they don't understand that they have, you know, if they could see the speed that they're travelling through billions of lifetimes, to understand that I'm the servant of Krishna, they have that. You know, every devotee has that basic understanding, and they have passed billions and billions of lifetimes. I just don't seem to get anywhere. But by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, associating devotees, serving the spiritual master, serving the gurus, that knowledge that Krishna is God, Vasudeva is everything, I am his servant, we rise above all these, you know, great, these, you know, speculative philosophers and philosophies and books and everything like that, transcend millions of lifetimes. So the conclusion is just chant Hare Krishna and save yourself a lot of trauma. Is there any other comments or questions?
Very quickly, so obvious. I know Lord Krishna is son of Devaki and Vasudeva, and he's also son of Nanda and Yashoda. So you say, but Vasudeva is everything, so in what context? Because we worship the Lord in so many forms, so why Vasudeva is everything?
Vasudeva, the son of Krishna, he is the origin of everything.
He's referred to as son of Krishna.
Vasudeva is his father, and Vasudeva, that is Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, he is everything. And the same statement is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the very beginning, it describes it in Vasudeva as everything. In the very beginning in the Srimad Bhagavatam as well. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. What's that? Yeah, the long A is Krishna's, is Krishna. Yeah, and the short A, yeah. Sometimes people don't know that. When you spell Vasudeva, you can spell it, and the first A doesn't have a stroke above it. That's Krishna's father. I mean, you see the first A with a stroke above it, that is the last of that, it's a longer A, and that's the sum of it. That's a good point. Oh,